Okay, hello, welcome. This is Identity Protection and Privileged Identity Management. My name is Mark Wall, and this is.
My name is Nitika Gupta, and I'm a program manager on the Identity Security Protection team.
Great. So we're going to be talking about, well, identity protection, privilege management, other features for securing access. Now, most of what we're going to be talking about today is going to be focused on the part in the middle, on protections, controls that are there in Azure Active Directory that then benefit the other Microsoft Online services like Office 365, Intune, Azure. But we're not limited to that. At the end of the talk, we'll also be covering some of the features that we have that benefit other clouds, applications running in SaaS, line of business, as well as things that you'll need to look at for your on-premises environment as well. Now, just so you know where you are, hopefully you have by now, but we're going to be talking again about security in this talk. If you're interested about how to manage access at scale independent of security, there's some other good talks. If you're here at Ignite, you should go back and look at the talk by Keith Brinsenhoff that covered a lot of other features about how to manage access, other talks by Nasos Kladakis on how to give access to on-premises applications and our partnerships there, as well as talks by Sarath and others on business-to-business collaboration, office groups, and the other new features that enable new forms of collaboration. So let's get a little bit deep into what do we want to do around security. There's lots of different ways we could go talk. We could talk about crypto algorithms and SSL, but I figured we'd do something a little bit more business relevant. So the cloud, everyone knows about cloud, malware, blah, 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 lots of benefits, but there's also a lot of skepticism. Okay, the regulators tell me can't use the cloud, or if I use the cloud, I can only use it for certain things. Or the auditors say, all right, we've accepted that you are going to be using cloud services, whether it's Microsoft or someone else, but we expect all those kinds of security controls that you are doing in your on-premises applications, we want to see that kind of data, those kind of reports, those kind of capabilities for your applications in the cloud as well. So how do you go about doing that? Obviously, a lot of things that you used to be able to do on-premises, like simply say, oh, we'll just put a big firewall around the PCI data, that'll keep it secure. Those kinds of network-level controls may not be applicable to a cloud environment. We have new controls, controls based on identity. The other problem is, even if you say, I don't care about the cloud, or I'm not regulated, we can do whatever we want in our business, the sad fact is there's a lot of bad things that happen out there and that can happen out there, and the data shows it. You see lots of things in the news about breaches. You see lots of things about even if your organization isn't attacked, your data finds itself in weird places with people going and signing up for SaaS applications, using applications, and there probably isn't going to be much you can do about that. Looking at the predictions from Gartner and other analysts, the number of people that most organizations will be able to hire to better manage security applications, to do those kind of protections, isn't growing very dramatically. So we need to rethink how we do that protection. We also need to think about what our attack vectors look like and what are the different actors. So obviously attacks are in the news a lot, and it would seem like nothing you could do would keep yourself safe. So big name companies with world-class CISOs, you know, some of the best in the business for security still manage to get hacked on a depressingly regular basis. So if you were at Ignite previously, if you've heard any of the talks from Anders Vinberg, you'll know the concept of assume breach. Assume something bad may have happened in the network, because the odds are it probably has. Now you may look at this, oh yeah, these are attackers. These are government agencies going after big companies, defense, you know, those military stuff. We just make, you know, paper, so no one's going to come after us, right? Or we're just a small business. We don't need to worry about this. But cybercrime isn't limited only to nation states going after big actors. There's lots of attacks that we see and have to go block going after small business as well. Economic crimes, crimes like, if I'm a bad guy and I want to do denial of service or spend a bunch of spam, I can easily get as many servers as I want in the cloud, right? I pull out my credit card and buy a bunch of VMs to launch my attack. But I don't want to use my VMs or my credit card, that costs money. I'd rather use your VMs and your VMs. So find a bunch of people who are administrators, have some VMs. They won't notice if there's an extra VM running for a couple hours. They probably wouldn't even notice. Oh, it's a few extra cents, a few extra dollars on their bill. It's negligible to them. But of course, multiply that by 1,000 or 10,000, suddenly denial of service attack. or attacks that say, I'm running low on money. Where can I get some money? I know. I'll find some organization, find out who their CEO, CFO is, and craft something that appears to be an email coming from the CEO to someone in finance saying, hey, a purchase order just came through. Need you to pay this purchase order. It's $1 million. Here's the account number. Send that over tomorrow. It's very, very urgent. And then the person in finance says, oh, OK, send that over. And then later on, the CEO saying, what are you talking about? What's this $1 million? I don't know anything about this. So even if the attack is a one-time attack, even if the attack is using all sorts of cloud services, it's not limited to just the big organizations. We see these on organizations of all scale. Two-person companies, 10-person companies, 100,000-person companies are all being targeted. Click. So if we look at the numbers. In a big enterprise, the attackers are there. They've probably already gotten in, and it's only a matter of time before we can go and find and remove their backdoors. There's lots of tools that are out there for that. I'll mention some at the end about how to go and look for and find signs of attack. And there's more tools coming up all the time. It's getting easier for the attacker as well. So there's lots of tools out there. If I'm an attacker, I can go buy a tool. There's marketplaces. I can go say, I'd like an attack tool for doing a denial of service attack. Here's how much I want to spend on doing my denial of service attack. I want a friendly GUI. I want a tool I can run anywhere, attack anywhere. I want something that has good Twitter integration. I want attack tools that I can get 24/7 phone support if my attack isn't working properly. There's a whole marketplace around this. All the things that the web and international commerce has empowered has also empowered tools like this one and many others where you can buy whatever attack you want. You want denial of service, you want spam, you want anything out there. There's probably a tool, there's probably a marketplace for that. So anyone from anywhere can launch attacks. So what are we going to do about that? Now that I've told you how bad it's going to be, let's see how good it can get. Here's the clicker.
All right. So as I mentioned in my introduction, my team is the Identity Security Protection Team. Our team's mission is to protect our users. So we protect our users on the consumer side, which is Microsoft account, as well as on the enterprise side, which is Azure Active Directory. On a daily basis, we look at like over 14 billion sign-ins. We analyze 10 terabytes of data. We deflect 1.5 million attacks every day. As Microsoft, we have a unique advantage where we have lots and lots of data. We run one of the biggest mail services for both consumer and enterprise. We run one of the biggest identity services, Microsoft Account and Azure Active Directory. We have teams within Microsoft that also share data with us. So we work with SharePoint Online, we work with OneDrive, Skype, and all those teams provide us signals that help us strengthen our analysis. We have other teams within Microsoft whose core focus is security as well. So we have the Microsoft Digital Crime Unit, which does a tremendous job of taking down botnets, working with law enforcement. We work with them to get that feed of data, so we know what are the machines end users are signing on from, which are botnet. And we make that data available to you. That I'll show in a minute. We also work with industry partners. So cybersecurity is an area where industry partners want to collaborate. So earlier this year, I don't know who all was there at the Cloud Identity Summit, we had Google and us on the stage talking about how we are sharing data, trying to make cybersecurity lesser of a problem. So this is an area where we partner not just with teams within Microsoft, but we also partner with other organizations and law enforcement and other partners. So machines learning for security. So in the old days when we never thought about cybersecurity, if a good user comes to us with a username password, we believe that's a good user. We never doubted, is it the right user or is it a bad actor? But times have changed. How many of us worry about cybersecurity? All of us. So we can't just assume that given someone has username password, this is a good guy. So what we have is a machine learning system. So folks who know machine learning would know that, what's happening? So folks who know machine learning, you know that the first thing you would do is get a coder to write a classifier. And what the classifier does is simply it looks at every sign-in, and it tries to determine if it's a good person or a bad person. Next, what you do is you analyze the data. We have tons of data. We have 10 terabytes of data, as we said. And then you try to figure out whether it's a false positive or a false negative or a true positive or a true negative. And that's what we call, in technical terms, labeling data. Once you have the labeled data, you have an analyst who looks at that data and tries to score that data. Based on the recommendations from the analyst, the coder then goes in and modifies the classifier. Lastly, once the classifier is updated, you get the operations team to deploy that classifier. But the issue with this is that there are humans involved. And typically, this whole cycle of having a classifier, making changes to the classifier, that can take 6 to 8 weeks. But as we said, the bad guys are sophisticated. They are moving really fast. And 6 to 8 weeks is not good enough. So what we have done within Microsoft is we have automated this whole process. Where analyzing data, making updates to the classifier, and deploying that is all automated and what we call a learner. And now what we are capable of doing is we can make updates to the classifier as many times a day as possible. We typically do that once a day, but we can do it in any minute we want. Let's take an example of an attack that we saw. So this was a school. We were trying to bring up a new algorithm. And what we noticed was we saw a lot of compromised accounts. So we saw that like around 1,750 out of 8,000 accounts were compromised within that school. As we were bringing up the algorithm was in the learning period. So what we noticed that there were spikes in the password lockout. And this was all coming from a single tenant, so it wasn't an Azure AD-wide attack. For a single school tenant, we noticed they were having password lockout spikes that you can see in the chart. Looking closely at the data, looking at data from an IP address perspective, what you see in front of you is the regular day traffic. What the learner was telling us that we are seeing spikes. We are seeing a lot of bad traffic coming from some suspicious IPs, which were very far away from the school's IP address. So geographically, they were very distant from the school's IP address. Something was off. Let's see the details of the attack. So what we saw on our side was we saw a lot of traffic, bad traffic, coming from bad guys. And that's probably because they were trying to test a script. After that, what we noticed was everything was quiet. So you see the dip in the chart. And then we saw a heavy amount of bad traffic, which is when they were trying to get into the accounts. What the blue line indicates is the point when our machine learning systems detected it, they kicked in, they learned from the pattern, and started deflecting those attacks. So blue is basically our machine learning systems rejecting all those bad sign-ins. And all this happened within a matter of 6 hours. Without any humans involved, the machine learning system automatically learned what's going on, the pattern that the bad guys were following, and learned how to deflect those attacks. Something that's not visible in the chart, which is the coolest part here, is there is some green traffic on the top that is not visible. So while we were fighting the bad guys, the good guys were still able to get into the account, they were still able to get their work done, while the bad guys were out of the accounts. That's what our machine learning allows us to do. So far we talked about how we do it. Next, switching gears, talking about what exactly we offer to you guys that you can leverage. So how many of you went to the conditional access session on Tuesday? If you guys haven't watched that session, very good session. Talks about all the CA conditional access capabilities that we have with Azure AD as well as Intune. So in a nutshell, what conditional access is about is for every sign-in, we try to determine a set of conditions. We see where is the sign-in coming from, what IP address it is, what is the device state, is it compliant, is it managed, or is it unmanaged, or whatnot. We also see what is the platform of the device. And lastly, we look at risk, and risk is the one I'm going to focus on in the next few minutes. So for every sign-in, we determine what's the risk of the sign-in, what's the risk of the user, and in future, we plan to add things like app risk. What's the risk of this app that the user is trying to sign into? What's the risk of this device? So we are trying to partner with a third party to figure out what's the device risk. So with all those conditions in mind, you can also set actions you want. So depending on this user coming from this device, from this IP address, this risk level involved, I want to block the sign-in. Or you could say, hey, I want to require additional assurance about that user before I let the user through. So you could say, I want a challenge for multi-factor authentication based on these conditions. Or additionally, you could say, I just want to allow access if these conditions are met. So that's the conditional access framework, which helps us add security to identity. All right. Azure AD Identity Protection. So Azure AD Identity Protection, a new feature that we GA'd earlier this month, along with Privileged Identity Management, offers you a consolidated view into users who are at risk. So these are users whose account might be compromised. It also offers you risk event information, which is what are these sign-ins that are risky, and it offers you configuration issues, so the vulnerabilities that you can fix to improve your security posture. I'm going to get into the details of what they are as we go through the demo. But it's not just about insights. We also offer you remediation. So within the console, you would see, hey, you should go reset the password for this user, or you should set up multi-factor authentication for the user. It's all there right in the console. Lastly, what we want to do is protect you guys. So the way we do that is what we want to prevent attacks in real time. So the coolest thing that we offer here is risk-based conditional access policy, which helps you automatically respond to risky sign-ins as well as compromised accounts. And I'll show you the power of these policies as we go through the demo again. Our customers have broader needs than those. Giving all this data within our experience is not good enough. We have data which shows that for every customer, they have like 2.3 SIEM systems. And what we really want to do is to avoid adding to it. So we have REST-based API support, so all the intelligence that identity protection has to offer, you could push it into your SIEM system. If you're a heavy Power BI user, you can push that data to Power BI. We have a connector, so few clicks, all that data shows up in Power BI. You can customize your dashboard. So we allow you to push all the intelligence that we have to offer, rich data that we have to offer. You can push that to SIEM, you can push that to Power BI, or any other monitoring tool that can integrate with our APIs. I'll show you our Power BI and Splunk integration as we go through the demos. Moving on to the fun part, that's demo. All right.
Six. Got it.
How many guys are signed up for identity protection? God, not a lot of you guys.
If you haven't, we'll have a link at the end for where you can go sign up. We expect you all to click that link before you go.
All right, let me quickly show you how you would sign up. So really simple, go to portal.azure.com, go under security and identity, and here you'll find privileged identity management as well as identity protection. Just click on that, pin to dashboard so you have easy access to it later on, create, and you're pretty much done. Just a couple of clicks, you have identity protection set up, and you're ready to go. Even though it's very simple to set up, make sure you have like a 30-minute slot after that, because every time a customer's onboarded to identity protection, they spend like 30 minutes investigating the issues. They were all freaked out. They're like, wow, I did not know this is going on in my organization. So make sure you have like a 30-minute slot after you sign up for identity protection to look into these issues. So this is the identity protection console, where we have three protection vectors. The first one here is users flag for risk. So these are username password pairs that might be compromised. So here I can click on that donut, which I just did, and I can see the list of users who are compromised. Additionally, I can see the current risk level. So for every user who is at risk, we determine what's the risk level associated with that user using our machine learning systems. So here in this case, I know IPC test is a high risk user. I know Elvin is a medium risk user. I can further click into this and understand what's going on with the account. So here I have more information about Elvin. So I know Elvin sits in US, he belongs to the IT department, whatnot. I can see a nice timeline view of the risk events. So things started to happen here, and then there were more risk events here. I do want to understand what exactly is going on, right? So you want to get to the IP address information, the device information, as much rich data you can get about that sign-in. You have it all there. So you just click on it, you see more information. Once you have done the investigation for Elvin's account, what you want to do is fix his account. Make sure the user is no longer at risk. And the way you do so is by resetting their password. So as I said, their username password is compromised. So you want to make sure their password is changed so they're no longer compromised. So here we offer two options for password reset that you can look through. But this required me to go to the console. So I had to go to identity protection first. Then I had to review Alvin's account, investigate the issue, and finally click on that password reset. There are humans involved. Obviously, there are going to be delays. So the moment we detect Elvin's account, it'll probably take hours or days before someone goes and fixes his account. It might be too late. So what we want to do is protect in real time. The moment I detect Elvin's account is at risk, I want the policy to kick in and ask Elvin to reset the password that very moment before he's able to get into the account. So we have a user risk policy. So here, we have a user risk policy where you can add users or groups. We have user risk as a condition. So here you can choose for risk level, low and above, medium or above, or high. You can decide that based on your security posture. Our typical recommendation is to go with medium. That's what I have in this demo setup. So going back, like thinking about the conditional access framework I talked about, that's exactly what it is. So you define a set of conditions, and now you define the outcome. So in this case, I've decided that I do not want to take the risk at all, so I'm going to block the user access. But that comes in the way of productivity, right? So you probably don't want to block access in all cases. So we have another option where you can require the user to do password change in a secure way. When I say secure way, what's going to happen is the end user will be prompted for multi-factor authentication first. Once they complete the challenge and we know that you're the good guy, that's when we let you change the password. So in this case, I'm just going to go with block, not make any policy changes. This is the coolest part of the policy. Every IT pro who sees this blade is super happy. So every time you set a policy, the thing that comes to your mind is, what's going to happen to my end users? How many of these users are going to get blocked? How many of them are going to be asked to change password? So what we have here is a way where we can estimate impact to the end user experience based on the current policy you've set up. So looking at that data, I can say three of your users will get blocked based on last 30 days of sign-in data. You're probably okay with that risk. So you can go ahead and click close here. Next thing I'm going to do is enforce this policy. I'm going to go ahead and save it. So we have been so far talking about what is the admin experience, how can I set policies. The thing that might be coming to your head is, so what happens to my end users? So when they run into this condition, what happens to them? So let's just take a look at the end user experience for user risk. So here I have a user who's at medium risk. All right. I think I signed in too fast. The policy takes a minute. Let's do that again. I just enforced the policy, so it probably takes a minute or two to.
Okay. Yeah, you may be going to a different data center. What would happen if you came in with like a Tor browser? You'd probably get locked out there.
I would get MFA challenge. I'll show that in a minute, but let's give it a shot again.
Okay.
Bear with me, guys. All right. Fingers crossed. This really doesn't want to work right now, so.
You would try setting a different policy?
Yeah, let me make a tweak to the policy. Let's quickly see what's going on here.
Maybe you aren't even included in it.
You know, that's wisdom. I was actually not included in this policy.
Good. So you weren't even impacted by it. Sometimes you only want to try this out with a few users first, make sure everything's working before rolling it out and locking out your CEO or your co-presenter.
So this is a shared demo environment, so I'm sure someone actually kicked me out of the policy. So the reason we have select users and groups is basically piloting purposes. You can also exclude users from the policy if you have an exclusion policy for your organization. All right.
Yay.
So finally, when I added this user to the policy, now I can see that the user account is blocked. So this is a user, Nitika, who's at medium risk. She's trying to sign in, trying to get to Azure. And the UI says that, hey, your account is blocked. We have detected something suspicious for your account. Go talk to your administrator. You can further see more details about this. So it says that this has been triggered by identity protection. You have a question. Do you want to hold on to it to the end? Sounds good. So there's more information about this sign-in and why it's blocked in this experience. So for IT pros, if you're trying to investigate issues, this is going to be super helpful for you. So awesome. First demo successful, almost there. So as I said, this is the first protection vector. We have users flagged for risk. What we really recommend you to do is enable the user risk policy so we can act on your behalf, automatically protect users, automatically make sure that bad users can't get into your accounts.
Right. And then if someone is having trouble and they're getting locked out and you're not sure why, you can exclude them just like we did here, and then they'll be able to log in. Obviously, they'll still be at risk, so you want to investigate them. But you can then control on a user-by-user basis who gets access and who doesn't. There's another question over there, but let's hold that for a minute.
Yeah, let's hold on to the questions till the end. So the second protection vector here is risk events. So these are sign-ins that are risky. And here we have six kinds of risk events. Only four of them are showing up in this tenant. The first one here is users with leaked credentials. Who here heard about the Yahoo breach last week?
Who here is impacted by the Yahoo breach last night?
How many of you know that your organization is impacted by it? Probably not.
No one knows.
So what we heard was 500 million username passwords were out there in the dark web. We have ways of getting that data. So as Microsoft, we work with security researchers to get that feed of data. And what we do is we match that against what's in Azure Active Directory. We match your username password, what's there in the breach, as well as what's in Azure AD. If there is a match, we flag it for you. So that's what that shows up in this report. So if I click into it, I know that IPC test user was leaked. I know Salah Ahmed, his account was leaked as well. I know Caleb Baker's account was leaked as well. So from here, you can actually deep dive into the user account, see what else was going on with their account. Ultimately, what you want to do is reset their password and fix it. So sign up for identity protection. You'll figure out if any of your users are actually part of that breach. So the next protection vector here is sign-in from anonymous IP addresses. These are sign-in coming from Tor browser, for instance. We have research which tells us that 94% of your Tor traffic is coming with malicious intent. So something for any enterprise to investigate if you see that in your organization. So here I know Alex Weinert, who's my manager. Don't start. He's actually trying to sign in from Tor browser very often. I see Elvin also signed in from Tor browser recently. So did Audrey. So I should probably contact these users, talk to them why they're using Tor. Do they have genuine business needs, or is it some malicious guy trying to get into this person's account? The other powerful thing we have here is you can actually give us feedback. So we have this whole complete cycle where you investigate, and then you tell us if it was a false positive for your organization, or was it an event that you don't care about. In that case, you can ignore it. So what you can do is you can give us feedback about these events. So our machine learning algorithm kind of learns what works for your organization, and it fine-tunes the data that it shows you. Something I would really encourage all of you guys to do. The third protection vector is impossible travel. So as the name indicates, you see a sign-in coming from US. I'm sitting here doing a demo. I see another sign-in from my account from India. Something is off. I can't possibly sign in from two places around the same time. So that's an example of impossible travel.
Right. So if you see any of your administrators with this, what that usually means, password sharing. one of your administrators probably given their password to someone else, like a vendor, and that vendor is then logging in as them and making changes. So this is a very helpful report.
Yep. So again, something for you to investigate. We have a nice timeline view of this. We have a table which gives you all the data. You can add additional columns to it as needed. Then you can give us feedback on this data if you want. The last identity protection risk event is sign in from unfamiliar locations. So this is another machine learning algorithm that we have. For every user account, we keep track of what is familiar locations for you. So every time we see a sign in coming from a location we have never seen you from before, we'll flag that in this report. So here I can look into this report, get a similar data about who are these users coming from these unfamiliar locations. So Alex is signing in from Amsterdam. He should be signing in from US most likely because that's where he is right now. So this is off something for you to investigate. But again, our goal is not to give you data to look at and investigate. We want to protect. So we want to make sure if any of these issues happen in the future, we can get in the way of that sign in, either block it or challenge it with multi-factor authentication so no bad guy gets into the account. So we have another policy called sign-in risk policy here. Very similar to user risk policy, serves a different purpose. So here, again, you can include users in groups. I'll make sure I include my account. So here it's all users. That's great. Let's make sure I'm not excluded.
Caught it.
I think my teammate is playing a trick on me.
Yeah, that's it, a teammate.
Trust me, I verified this last night, all worked in one go. So here the condition is slightly different. Instead of talking about user risk, which is the account compromised, we're talking about sign-in risk. So what's the likelihood that the sign-in is coming from a bad guy? So here again, you can define the risk level per your security posture. You can say low and above, medium or above, you can say high. So our recommendation here is similar as well. So we go typically with medium and above. That's what I would recommend you to do. So based on these conditions, you can have controls. Controls here, slightly different from user risk. In this case, you either want to block or you want to require multi-factor authentication. So here in this case, I've set a policy to require multi-factor authentication. I have a nice view of what's the impact of this policy on my organization. You can further enforce this policy and hit on save. Next, you're going to be wondering what does the end user see on their end, right? So you want to see the end user experience for this policy. And this time, fingers crossed. Let's see if things work or not. So here I have a Tor browser. You guys familiar with Tor? Some of you guys are. So what it helps me do is it helps me route traffic through like all over the world so no one knows where I'm coming from. If you click on the onion here, you can actually see what is the routing that is going on in this case. So I'm going through Luxembourg for some reason. So let's go ahead and sign in with this account from Tor browser. All right, it's working. Since it's trying to route traffic from all over the place, it takes a while to load the pages. It's really slow. Awesome. So I'm entering an end user account credentials here.
And this isn't just watching only the logins for Azure. So this is the same whether you're just going to Intune or Office 365. They're coming in from a mobile device, coming in from Outlook, or in a web browser.
I'm just verifying my policy. Mm-hmm. All right, let's do this again.
Time.
Awesome. It worked. So I entered my username password as usual I would do one every other day, but this time I got something different. It says, help us protect your account. And under that it says, we have detected something unusual about the sign-in. So you might be coming from a new location, device, or app. So I'm coming in from a Tor browser. So the system needs me to verify my account. So here it's trying to send me a text message. Going back to the policy I said require multi-factor authentication every time the sign-in risk is medium and above. So that's why it's prompting me for MFA. So I'm reading out my code from my band, Microsoft band. 4, 9, and 4, 5. Awesome. So the previous screen was very important. So it was, if it was a bad guy trying to get into your account, they would have got stopped at that point because they don't have access to your phone. They don't have access to your MFA credentials, so they won't be able to sign into your account. Only the good person, in this case, Nitika, me, I had the account set up for MFA. I was able to get in. If it was a bad guy, they would have stopped there. We would have protected your account. So that's how policies work. That's how user risk and sign-in risk policies work.
Yeah. If you're wondering why we got that error, we're actually blocking Tor at the portal level as well. So that's why we got that subscription error.
Yeah. Awesome, so we talked about two protection vectors so far, users flag for risk, risk events. The third protection vector that we have is vulnerabilities. So these are weaknesses within your environment that you can fix to improve your security posture. So an example of that is users without multi-factor authentication registration. As you just saw in the demos, MFA is our only way of knowing if you're talking to a good person or a bad person. So if you don't have MFA set up for your users, there's no way we can protect you guys using those policies. So that's a vulnerability within your organization. We recommend you get all your users set up for multi-factor authentication. The second one is, actually all these are coming from privileged identity management, and I'm not gonna steal Mark's thunder by talking about them. So I'll skip through the remaining vulnerabilities. So in addition to three protection vectors, all these policies I talked about, we have alerting and email notifications. So every time a user gets to a risk level, we send you an email alert. And all that is configurable. So you can say, I want to know every time a user gets to low and above risk level. Or you can say, I only care about the high risk users. I just want to get an alert for those. So you can configure all that right here. Awesome. Last thing is, we want to proactively tell you what's going on within your organization when it comes to security. So we have a weekly digest email which goes out every Sunday, which tells you, hey, these are the new users we detected, these are the new risk events we saw, these are the new vulnerabilities. So go ahead and spend your Monday investigating those issues. So you don't have to come to our console proactively, we will come to you proactively, tell you, hey, new user detected at risk. Or check out this weekly digest, it tells you all the issues that are going on in the last week. So far we looked through identity protection experience within the Azure portal. As I mentioned earlier, we want customers to be able to access data where they are. So if you're using Power BI, if you're a heavy Power BI customer, you can use our Power BI connector that should be released soon to basically push all the data you saw in identity protection to Power BI. Within Power BI, you can build like nice visualization. You can see a nice map view here so I can see, hey, these are the risk events shown by the location as well as the type of risk event they are. I can further actually share this report out with my teammates or management. So this is a common request where we get. I want to share my findings with my management. So you can build a custom dashboard with data you want to share with your management and share it out right from Power BI. So in a nutshell, what we have done here is we married the rich data that we provide with identity protection with the awesome visualization capabilities that Power BI has to offer. Lastly, and Mark is looking at me saying you're taking too much time.
No, this is good. I'm learning something.
Hopefully the audience is as well. Lastly, I said you can push the data in your SIEM system. How many of you guys are using Seam? Hopefully Splunk is not new to you guys. So here I've built a Splunk app where I pushed all this risk event data to Splunk. Now I can visualize all the risk event information, user information in Splunk. I have a single pane of glass. If I'm using Splunk for other reasons, I can push all that data, have it in one place rather than having to navigate to different consoles. So this is just an example of how you can push data to Seam, Power BI, or any other monitoring tool that you might have. Switching to slides. That's all for the demos.
Great, thanks. Okay.
Next, I have 30 minutes for Mark to cover 10 other slides.
Ah, I'll go fast. Okay, so thanks. So what we have covered up to this point is controls, detection, alerting, and remediation for everyone in your organization. Obviously, you can filter it out. You can say, I don't want this to apply to someone, especially if that person's about to do an important demo. But maybe you want to focus more on particularly exposed individuals, administrators. And why is that? Well, for a lot of reasons. The attackers love administrators. Why? Because if you can find and compromise an administrator, great. You can find a place to hide. You can go across the network, you can say, start up a VM, you can go create more users. There's lots of things you could do as administrators. And so you talked at the beginning, the concept of assumed breach. Attackers are juicy targets. The other problem that we've seen, just looking at how we've been designing security software in the last 20 years, is we've made the administrative accounts extremely powerful. And we've focused a lot of attention on them. So you've seen a lot in the news where people are saying, oh, well, there's an admin account, and that admin account got compromised, and then immediately the attacker was able to go everywhere, to do everything. It was game over in a matter of minutes. So we need to do better. So one of the things we were looking at, we talked to some customers a number of years ago, and we said, tell me about your administrative practices. How does someone, say, fix a problem in Exchange? So Joe needs to fix a problem in Exchange. What does he do? Calls up help desk. Hey, there's a problem in Exchange, I need to go fix it. Great. Well, the easiest thing to do, right? Let's make Joe a domain admin. That way he can fix Exchange, he'll never call help desk again. Help desk wants to help people. Help desk wants to help Joe. Okay, great. I added you to the domain admins group. Your problem is solved, Joe. You're no longer going to be bounded by permissions issues ever again while you're solving your Exchange issue. Oh, and by the way, Joe, remember to call back when you're done so we can take you out of that group, because it's very important you call back. Oh, Joe's, of course, never going to call back. Why would he? He's a domain admin. He can do whatever he wants to. He can help out other people with their problems. It's a powerful political thing. And of course, a huge risk to the organization. Joe becomes a domain admin. He remains a domain admin indefinitely. And this happens over and over again, organizations of all sizes. We've seen this in commercial. We've seen this in government. We've seen this really bad in higher ed. Hey, let's make the senior class be admins so they can fix passwords for the junior class. Great. So that was on-prem. And we'll talk about what we're doing in a moment to help with that problem. Now the cloud. The cloud is going to be new and wonderful and different and better, right? Joe says, oh, there's a problem with Exchange Online. He calls up help desk. Oh, yeah, let's fix it. Joe, we'll make you a global admin. Then you can go and fix Exchange Online, do whatever you need to. You'll be able to take care of self-service, fix your own administration. It's the same kind of issue. And again, we've seen this in the past. Organizations going through the onboarding process oftentimes take some shortcuts. Let's say, let's just make everyone a global administrator. It'll be faster and easier to onboard. Plus, if I'm onboarding to two or three applications, maybe I've onboarded to Exchange Online, and then another team's starting to use Intune or Azure or a third-party SaaS app, and then suddenly you wake up and say, wow, I wonder just how many global administrators we have in our company, and who are these people? If you've been to some of the talks, like if you went to the Unilever talk, you've seen some other organizations, a lot of them have been in the situation. So what do we do about this? We have the notion that we want to have people be able to do administration. You should be able to go fix Exchange or fix Exchange Online or fix DNS whenever you need to. But that doesn't mean you should be permanently, persistently an administrator in your organization. Instead, we have the notion, just-in-time administration. If you've been to the Windows Server talk, you've heard about what we're doing with Windows Server and just-in-time. Same idea here for Azure Active Directory. When a user needs to perform a task that requires admin privileges, they can activate. They can say, I need to do this task. They can be required to do MFA at the time. That privilege is time limited. It could be an hour, a day, 3 days, you know, what makes sense for your organization. At the end of the time, privilege is taken away from the user. They can reactivate later if they need to, but everything is time limited. Furthermore, you want to know what's going on. Did more admins somehow get created while this person was supposedly fixing Exchange? We've seen that happen. We've had customers call us up and say, yeah, we noticed this new admin appear. Where did they come from? How did they get this? So we want to give more visibility. So privilege identity management, that's another feature we mentioned at the beginning, has just become generally available. Let me show you what privilege identity management looks like. Let's switch over to a different demo box and see what we can see. So let's start in the Azure portal. So here's the Azure portal, here's the same tenant. Let's go into privilege identity management. So three things I can do. Let's start with management. First of all, visibility. What's going on in my organization? How many people are in administrative roles? What roles are they in? Second thing, let's set some policy. Let's look at what's going on. So we can see, for example, there are too many global administrators. Wow, there's a lot. How many global administrators are in your organization? 1, 10, 100? Some organizations say they simply didn't know. They didn't know all these people had become domain admins. So what do you want to do about that? Well, you could do a number of things. You could say, this isn't even a real user, I'll just take them out. You could ask them, I'll show you how to do that in a moment. Or you could say, well, maybe they need to be global administrators for some reason, but probably not 24/7, 365. I would say most people who are in an administrative role in an organization are probably there because they had an issue, something they had to fix at one point in time. Or maybe they were in that role because they didn't know there were other roles. They didn't know that there's 30 other roles that would give them the permissions they need. So what we can do is we can convert people to a finer grained role. So let's look at our global administrators and let's look at some users here. We can say, Aaron. Aaron's probably a permanent administrator because he's doing admin work all the time. He's in this tenant every day, fixing issues, helping customers, doing great things. Abby, not so much. Abby maybe needed to fix one thing, but kind of has drifted off and is doing marketing things now. So we've converted Abby to be eligible. What does eligible mean? Eligible means that if Abby later on realizes that she actually needs to do administrative tasks, she can. And you can set a policy for what it means for someone to take on the global admin privileges. So when a user like Abby is eligible, we can say she can become a global admin again. But there's a limit. She can only be in the global admin role for 8 hours at a time. After that time, she automatically drops down to being, say, an ordinary user again. We send an email. Just in case Abby had found herself inadvertently sharing her password in the past with someone else, and that other person is trying to use her admin account, we can require multi-factor authentication. We require that by default for all the highly privileged roles like global administrator. We can also require more information, like you have to put a justification or a trouble ticket number. So if you say, well, we've got a lot of outsourced IT in our organization. We've got 30, 40 people in our directory. They all say they have to be global admins. Well, why don't we make them eligible? And then when they need to do something, they supply the trouble ticket number so that that all is logged. You can go back here then and say, when someone activates their role, that information is audited. We can see, you know, how many users are activating, and we can see the history. Why was this user taking on the role? What was the reason? Oh, they're doing a demo. A lot of demos going on this week. And there's lots of additional roles. So the other thing you can do is you can put someone into a finer grained role. So in addition to the roles like global administrator, we have a number of new roles we put in the directory. Security administrator and security reader. We've heard from a number of customers, they say, we have people who just want to see a report. All they want to do is just see what's going on. Do we have to make them global admins just so they can see data? No, you can make them a security reader. And a security reader, they can come into here, they can come into identity protection, they can see that data, they can get a report out of the system, but they don't have to be a global admin. We also have finer grain roles. So we can have roles like Exchange Online Administrator. So I can say, maybe the users were global admin because they were involved in an Office 365 onboarding. So I could make them an Exchange admin. So I could go and take Abby and say, Abby, we're going to make Abby now an Exchange administrator. If she needs to be a global admin, she can step up and become a global admin later, but perhaps she just wants to be an Exchange admin most of the time, or an Intune admin, or SharePoint Online administrator. So we have a lot of additional roles in the system you can manage through PIM. And of course, we have an experience here, so that when a user, you know, myself or Abby or someone else, needs to take on an additional role, I can go through and see what roles I have available. I can click on, I can activate a role. Here I'm saying, I want to take on the user administrator role. I click activate, I give the reason. I'm doing a demo. And then I can take on a role. Great. And then that role will go away again when I'm done using it, when my time limit is up. I could configure more policies. I could say, I need MFA when that happens. Because you might have a lot of users and say, oh, I can't use MFA because I've got a BlackBerry. It's some weird excuse for why I can't do MFA. But you really want them to do MFA when they're doing administration. So you say, all right, we'll make an exception for you. If you're going and reading email and stuff, we won't require MFA at login time, but we will require you to do MFA when you take on that role. That way, we ensure we've identified the user with multi-factor authentication before they do an administrative task. And it could be Azure MFA. If you have something else, like Secure ID, or you've got smart cards or virtual smart cards or Hello, and you say, well, that's how we do MFA, great. You can use those as well. You can have your identity system send the claims up to Azure PIM and say, don't worry, we've already taken care of the user. They MFA'd with their smart card on-prem, so that's good enough. So we can use that as input. Make sense? So this is privilege management. I can go through, I can see who my users are in the role, I can establish what role they need to be in. I can make them eligible for more than one role. So I could say, you know, Abby is perhaps permanently an Exchange admin, but she could become an Intune admin or a SharePoint admin if she needs to do so for a limited time. I can also ask someone to go and review and make sure this is right. Because one thing we see a lot when an organization is subject to audits, subject to those regulators looking over their shoulder and say, do all these users really need to be administrator? Well, let's ask. So we can say, well, I want to review access. So I create a review and say, I'd like to have someone go and sign off that these are my global administrators. And I could pick a person. I could say, that person over there, they're the head of IT. They should go and do that sign off. They'll go through, they'll do the line item veto. They've denied a user, they've approved a user, and they've signed off. Or I could ask the users themselves to go and sign off. Everyone on this list would get an email, they come to this experience, and they could sign off, yes, I still need to be an administrator, or no, I needed this for onboarding, but not anymore. You can require them to give a justification. Why do you need to be an administrator? And again, all that's audited, so that then, when the regulators are circling, you can say, look, here's the log, here's who approved, here's why, here's the role, so you have all that data available. You can then prove these are the people who need to be the admins. You can turn on MFA, as we showed earlier, in identity protection to keep their accounts secure. So this is the portal view. There's lots of things in here. You can turn this on your tenant. But let's say you've got some users who aren't web browser users, maybe people like me or old Unix administrators. Well, that's fine. You can do these things from the command line as well. So we have PowerShell. We can go do things like okay, so I can go and get my privileged role assignments. All right, I'm able to be a security reader. Let's try. Why are we doing this? We're doing this because I like PowerShell better. Okay?
I think most people in the room would agree to that.
So let's see what's going on. So now I've said I want to activate the security reader role. It's going to go send that activation request, and great. Now I've done this through PowerShell, so I can go and activate a role. I don't have to use a portal. I can go and script this. I can say I want to have my applications go and take on these roles. I can also get more data out of this, so I can do more from the APIs. So in addition to PowerShell, we also have Graph APIs for this. So we have Graph APIs for privilege management. So you can see things like, you know, the role assignments. You can do activation. So even if you're not using PowerShell, you say, well, I've got this third-party tool that I'm using for privilege management. Or we rolled our own privilege management tool. How do we integrate this in with Azure AD? We have APIs for this. You can call these APIs and kick off role assignments, make people eligible, find out who's currently in these roles, get the alerts, get the notifications. We have APIs here for PIM. We have APIs for identity protection. You can go see those risk events as well. So if you say, well, we want to bring this into our own custom UI, again, we have APIs for this. We have lots of documentation up on, you know, what do all these events mean. And so then you can script a lot of what's going on here. So in addition to doing basic things like role activation, I could do things like, let's find one I did earlier. OK, so I'm going to call a graph request. So here's PowerShell. But again, you don't have to be using PowerShell. You can use any language you want. And I'm going to the Graph API, which if you went to any of the Office talks, you've heard about. And so I'm pulling from the Graph API, stop my screen a little, privilege operation events. And my access token has expired. Good. So let's go get a new access token. Let's find where I get my access token. I do a lot of typing here. Here we go. Let's get a new access token. So I'm going to re-authenticate. You're going to lock me out?
Hopefully not.
We'll find out.
The thing to note here is this PowerShell client is using modern authentication. So if you had MFA enabled, Mark would have to do MFA right here before he can get to PowerShell. So that's super cool.
OK, so now I've re-authenticated. I've got a new token. And now I can get data from the Graph API. So I now have some JSON from the Graph API. Because I'm in PowerShell, let's convert the JSON to PowerShell. Response for this content. OK, and now I have some PowerShell objects. So let's see what I can do with them. So these are the operation events. So let's just look at some examples of things I can do with those. So let's see who activated in my tenant. So I'm looking back over the operation events. I can do some basic queries like, if it's request type activate, let's see what's going on. So I can go see my activations, who activated at what time. Or I can see things like, let's find another command, assignments. So you want to say, how did someone get to be an administrator? Who did this? So we can go back and look at the log here, and we can pull the information. You'll have CSV and Excel, as well as the web views. We have APIs. You can say, all right, at this time, Audrey Oliver assigned S. Bishop to the privileged role administrator role. Scrolling forward, you can see, you know, other users assigning other people to roles. So you have a picture here of what's going on in real time in your organization. So if you've got a SIEM tool, if you've got a console, if you've got things that people are looking at already, or if you just want to write some scripts, you can write them in PowerShell like I'm doing here. You can write them in any other language, you know, Visual Basic or Java or anything you want, because it's all just available through a Graph Web API. OK, so that's what we have in privilege management. So let's show you what some customers have done. If you went to the talk by Unilever, you'll have seen one example from that. If you want to know more, well, I'll point to them. OK, and if you haven't seen the talk by Unilever, you should definitely go look at that. Now let's pick another organization that went through this process as well. Basically, a lot of big organizations have the same challenge. Too many administrators end up in their global admin role. Just like on-premises, too many people are getting into the domain admin role. So what do you do? First of all, turn on MFA. If you can't turn on MFA for everyone at login time, we think you should. But if you can't, at least turn on MFA when someone activates a role so that you don't have a mere password between the user and a privileged role. The second thing to do, start asking people for justification. You can do an access review. You can go and ask the users themselves or ask an IT person, why is this person an administrator? You can also require them to provide a justification. Make everyone eligible for the role and say, when you activate the role, give the reason or give a trouble ticket. What's the reason why you're using this role? Then you can very easily weed out people who are not using the role or using the role for other interesting purposes and go talk to them. And then finally, if you do this, if you convert users to be eligible, then you'll see who's never used their role, who never activated their role. They were eligible for global admin. They never activated it. It was 3 months, you know, 6 months. You'll get an alert. You'll get that list of users. And then you can go and take them out of the role because they haven't used it. They didn't need those privileges. So we did this here within Microsoft IT. And here are our numbers. So we went through. We converted 97.89% of our global administrators to be eligible. So now we're left with only two persistent permanent administrators. Those are our, you know, our emergency break glass accounts. We did the same with our other roles. We got rid of all the permanent password administrators, got down to 95% of the user administrators. They've all been converted, except for those six, so far to eligible. So we're going to keep rolling out this process. We've got a lot of roles here on the right in the Azure Active Directory. We have more capabilities going into PIM. In the future, we're going to be tying this privilege management into other parts of the system, into Azure, into the Azure subscriptions, and into other applications in the future. So this is how you can start to control your administrators in Azure AD, Office 365, those users who have their roles represented in the directory. Now, what if you want to go beyond the Microsoft Cloud? What if you want to go to other services as well? So, Cloud App Security, some of you may have seen some talks on this. There's lots of things that Cloud App Security does in the organization. You can do data analysis. You can look at data held within these applications. You can look for a lot of alerts, a lot of capabilities in Cloud App Security. I'm not going to cover that, but I'm going to show you one thing that I find personally very interesting about Cloud App Security. Let me just switch over. Oh, wrong demo.
Seven.
Let's see if I can just bring this up. So one of the things I find cool about Cloud App Security is I can see when there's admin role changes in applications. So I didn't have to go configure any proxies or anything like that. I just wired up Cloud App Security to Office 365 and Salesforce.com, and now I get this alert. And again, they have an API, so if I want to go pull this data from a REST API, I can do that as well. And here I'm getting notified that users are taking on roles inside of SaaS applications. I didn't do this, someone else did. So someone went into, SaaS is this, Office 365. Someone made Alex Wee a security administrator in Office. Well, that's interesting, I should go look at that. Let's see what else. We have some changes here going on in Salesforce. So if we scroll down here, we can see that inside of Salesforce, we made a change. So we changed Nitika Gupta to be a system administrator. You didn't even know that. You're a system administrator inside of Salesforce. Because this is one thing that a lot of organizations, oh, it wasn't you? Okay, it's someone else. So this is one thing that a lot of organizations are concerned about. What's going on in those SaaS applications? What's going on inside of Salesforce or Box or these other applications? So we want to get that visibility. And Cloud App Security helps to then track the admin accounts and the activities that are going on there, even those that aren't, you know, natively integrated into Azure AD. So a lot of exciting things there. More things in Cloud App Security, obviously, than just that. So I started at the beginning by saying I'd also be covering the on-premises as well. So a couple technologies I want to highlight in my last few minutes. Advanced Threat Analytics. If you have Active Directory on-premises and you have not already tried Advanced Threat Analytics, you need to go do that. And the reason is, just like identity protection, once you go and you put in Advanced Threat Analytics and you have it start watching your AD, start watching the traffic, you will probably find some very interesting things going on in your Active Directory, in your domain environment that you didn't realize was going on. And probably some of them are malicious. That's just a, unfortunately, sad fact of the math. But what Advanced Threat Analytics does is it doesn't just say, oh, things are bad all over. It tells you exactly what happened and why. So the really cool thing I love about ATA is you get to see the timeline of what happened on premises. So ATA is sitting next to your Active Directory infrastructure, watching your traffic going to the domain controllers. And if it sees things going on, it tells you, you know, it sees past a hash attack. Where did it come from? What client was launching this? So oftentimes what'll happen is people get malware onto their boxes. You know, maybe on your laptop, you're not even a domain admin or not even a local admin, just an ordinary user on the box. But malware gets on there. So malware is there, it's on the network, it's on the LAN, it's being controlled through someone's command and control center. So it wakes up and says, ah, I'm on a corporate network. So the command and control will say, okay, find a domain controller. That's easy enough. Now start asking the domain controller to check some passwords. Hey, is the admin password password 123? No, okay, try password 456. Try all the obvious things. Then find some users, try guessing their passwords. So these are the kinds of things that ATA will watch for and alert. Maybe seeing strange username password combinations from a VPN, that's normal. You know, the incoming VPN box, you know, if you got a Cisco box or something on the edge of your network, yeah, I'd expect to see some weird passwords coming in from there. But random people's laptops should not be doing password guessing attacks. So you can use that to then see there's some abnormal behavior going on with that box. You can then go to that box, you know, eliminate the malware. or if someone's password has been compromised and the attacker has already gotten in, found a user, and is jumping from box to box, going, performing reconnaissance, looking for systems, you get those kind of alerts through ATA. So very important. If you haven't already looked at this, definitely take a look, see if this will work for your AD environment. Now, another thing I talked about was that whole problem with Joe becoming a domain admin. Well, I didn't want to leave you hanging with that, so I want to go back and solve that one. So if you went to the Windows Server 2016 talk, or if you went to Mark Simos and Ryan Puffer's talk this morning about the securing privileged access, you'd have seen a demonstration of this. The privileged access management capabilities in Microsoft Identity Manager and Windows Server 2016. What this provides is the same kind of scenario as what we did in PIM. On-premise, you maybe had too many domain admins, and maybe your domain was already breached, or you didn't know. For most cases, we just don't know. Is there a bad guy in there? So how can we make this better? You can say, with privileged access management for Active Directory on-prem, when Joe needs to do something, he can take on the rights for a limited time, you know, just like PIM, an hour, a day, what have you. We also have some additional things in on-premise, like you can say, I want to have an approval workflow happen. So I could do, Joe needs to be an admin for an hour, okay. Does he do MFA? Yes, MFA check pass, and I can do approvals. So I can say, I want to have all my vendors get approved by someone who's a full-time employee before they do any administration, but I can allow my full-time IT staff to go in, you know, no questions asked. When that user gets in and gets approved or they pass MFA, then great. We put them into this new feature we added in Windows Server called Shadow Principal Groups that allows that user then to have privileges to be a domain admin or an Exchange admin or a VM admin, what have you, in the domain environment. Be able to go and log into machines, be able to work with the Just Enough administration that Ryan Puffer showed earlier. And then, just like with PIM, those privileges get taken away automatically. The user's Kerberos ticket expires, the user can no longer do remote PowerShell or web apps, they can no longer have those privileges, so they go back to being an ordinary user again. So if you're concerned about these kinds of attacks of, you know, what if an admin gets compromised and you have on-prem AD, you should look into this. But wait, there's more. So I don't have time to go into everything, so I'll just give you one link. The upper left corner, aka.ms/privsec. If you have on-premises domains, you should read that link, PrivSec. Why? Because that link tells you the recommended sequence for what technologies to look at. Because we have so many things that we've been building into Windows Server and Windows and products like MIM and Azure AD that you'll say, well, where do I start? So go to the PrivSec link. It'll tell you the sequence. What can you do in the first 2 weeks? What do you do in the first month? What's going to require a little bit more planning, forethought? It might take you 3 or 4 months to deploy. So it gives you the recommended order, and it has links to all the other technologies, things that we just haven't had time to cover today, like the Just Enough administration, like Credential Guard, like the idea that you should have a lockdown workstation for doing administration. We do this here at Microsoft, so our staff over here in the corner who do the administration of Microsoft Online Services are not doing it from this laptop here that they carry around to a conference and have who knows what get on from USB sticks. Instead, they have a dedicated machine for doing administration. So there's guidance here on the link at the bottom. If you want to lock down an administrator workstation the same way we do at Microsoft, we have a step-by-step guide of how to go about doing that, how to lock down the workstations, how to lock down the domains, how to harden your Active Directory, how to monitor your Active Directory with ATA, and how to do the time-limited permissions with privilege management for your Active Directory, just like we do with Azure AD. And of course, there's lots of other technologies here, but I just wanted to make sure we got through those and have some time for questions at the end. Thank you for the applause to the other room. If you haven't taken a look at this, if you haven't looked at a number of these technologies, there's lots of other things here, and there'll be a list at the end of this deck. So you download the deck from the tool, or go, if you're watching on YouTube, look at the other videos on this channel, and he'll talk about some of these other technologies. If you're not familiar with things like information protection or cloud app security, take a look, watch their videos. There's a lot of good guidance on how you can extend these kind of protections, not just for your on-premises domains and your Microsoft Online Services, but also the third-party clouds, how you protect data, whether it's in Office, or in SharePoint Online, or in Box, or Dropbox, or Salesforce. You have lots of additional technologies that extend the reach of these user-based permissions out to the third-party SaaS apps as well. With that, I want to leave you with this list of links. So we've talked about a lot of technologies, talked about a lot of APIs. I know a number of you secretly want to be programmers. I certainly do. And so if you want to go try this out, you can go get a trial, sign up. Trial is free. You can try out identity protection. You can try out PIM. And we have lots of APIs, PowerShell. You can go and dig deep into these and figure out how to bring this in to your environments, tie it into the SIEM tools you have, tie it into the privilege management tools you have. And then you'll be able to get these alerts and better operate your enterprise at scale.
Awesome.
Awesome. OK. Well, thanks a lot.